Blog Talk Radio.
Women have heard of Jalop, if you've heard the noise they make, but let me introduce my new Rocket 88. Yes, it's straight, just one way. Everybody likes my Rocket 88. Baby, we'll ride in style, moving all along. Smart and designed, black convertible top, and the gals don't mind. Going with me, riding all around town for joy. Blow your horn, Raymond, blow. In my rocket and don't be late, baby, we're pulling out about half past eight. Going round the corner and get a fifth. Everybody in my car's gonna take a little nip. Move on out, oozing and cruising along.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was Jimmy Clanton and his Mississippi Delta Cats. Hey, everybody, James Bostic here on A Conservative's Perspective at Patriot Nation Radio here at blogtalkradio.com. We also have a recorded version of the program that goes out on the Mojo 50 Radio Network, mojo50.com. If you aren't listening, you should be, because it is the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio out there. So you can find it anywhere. Mojo50.com. We do it live here Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Before I introduce our guest this evening, let me remind you all that no one is perfect. He needs no introduction, ladies and gentlemen. What he needs is a conclusion, and we hope that he gets it here with us tonight. Our friend, my friend, and a terrific friend of the program, guaranteed good radio, voted the finest mind in Brooklyn, Mr. Michael Cutler. Welcome, Michael. It's good to have you with us.
James, thank you so much for that introduction, I think. it's always great joining in. I love the bumper music leading in. I actually had a 1963 blue four-door sedan Oldsmobile Rocket 88 way back when. What do you think of that?
Oh, that doesn't surprise me. You had a Jaguar too, didn't you?
I had a Jag. I had a Porsche. I had an RX-7. Yeah, I've always, you know, I had lost my parents to cancer. Personal story. It was a tough time. Within a year and a half, I lost both of them. And I've kind of, with a bit of tongue in cheek, said that I developed a chemical dependency, and it was gasoline. I drove sports cars, flew airplanes. It was a way to blow off steam. In a safe, sane way, although I did have something of a lead foot. But what troubles me today, and it goes with even the commercials, we've got Americans convinced that any hardship, any problem can somehow be fixed with a pill or some other chemical substance that you ingest. I promise you, I never ingested gasoline. And it's a tragedy. And we're losing 100,000 people per year to opiate overdoses. Think about that. But that's only the tip of the proverbial iceberg, because think of how many people are killed by the gangs that smuggle the drugs and traffic in the drugs. Think of how many people die because people operate motor vehicles under the influence. People commit crimes to get the money to support their habits. And, you know, the cigarette commercials were very effective at getting people to stop smoking. I'm living in the house my parents bought when I was 11 years old. I'm sitting in my office, which used to be my bedroom when I was a kid, and a couple of my own children have slept in this room. So I'm really at home. This is it for me. This is my fortress. But my goodness gracious, I used to have to sweep the sidewalk to get rid of cigarette butts when I was a kid. That was one of my chores. I think I spotted 2 cigarette butts in the last month on the sidewalk in front of my house now. Why? Because the commercials have been that effective at convincing people that smoking is crazy. In fact, I lost my dad because he was a heavy smoker and he worked in the shipyards during the Second World War. So the synergy between the asbestos and the tobacco killed him when he was in his mid-50s. It was a horror show. I was just 19 when we lost him. But now nobody smokes. Back then, everybody smoked. Why in the world, I wonder, wink, wink, that we don't see commercials to convince people to not use especially illegal drugs, especially the opiates, especially the synthetic drugs? We are allowing biological and chemical warfare to be waged against us by China and other countries who have flooded America with fentanyl, who have flooded America with cocaine and heroin and all kinds of garbage that kills people, destroys families, takes the future away from people, puts people in jail, breaks up families. Think about all of the repercussions that the drug trade has for America and how many trillions of dollars in rich Wall Street, the banking industry, and real estate. If you go to New York, if you go to Queens, think about El Chapo Guzman, the most prolific and violent of all the Mexican cartel drug leaders. He was prosecuted in Queens, actually in Brooklyn, short distance from where Chuck Schumer lived. Why Queens? Because he was moving his drugs into Roosevelt Avenue and other places within Queens, and New York City was the hub for the Mexican cartel. Why would the city with the biggest, most sophisticated police department become the hub for the drug trade? Because of sanctuary policies. Think about all of these interconnections, folks. Think about Joe Biden, who has dismantled our border. Think about the fact that the battle, the war being waged right now in Ukraine, is a war over one word. And I've said it, this was the word that whenever Trump used it, especially at the United Nations, the world leaders had a quiet meltdown. They probably ran to the bathroom. The word was the S word? Yes, sovereignty. Sovereignty. How many times did Trump stand at the UN, pound the podium, and say every nation is entitled to sovereignty? Oh, my God, the globalists went bananas. And so the Ukraine is at war with Russia that wants to strip Ukraine of its sovereignty. Citizens of the Ukraine have given their lives defending their nation's sovereignty, and Joe Biden can't give America's sovereignty away fast enough, but he's only the last of a string of presidents, with the exception of Biden, who wanted to end American sovereignty. And it's both sides of the aisle. And it so upsets me. And I will let you in on a little whatever. I do a couple of radio shows regularly. And one of the hosts, and we're good friends. I love the guy. We don't agree all the time, which is great. We're not supposed to agree. Why we're choosing up sides in America today is beyond me. I am not a conservative. I'm on a conservative radio show. I've always thought of myself as an old-fashioned liberal, an Ed Koch, JFK, Harry Truman liberal, Scoop Henry Jackson, liberal, who accepts the idea that other people see things differently. That's what the First Amendment is all about. If I like vanilla ice cream, you don't have to like vanilla. You don't have to like ice cream at all, okay? We're entitled to disagree. That's the beauty of the First Amendment. I was going to teach debate on the college level. My degree was in communications, arts, and sciences. I jokingly call it my BA in BS. But let me tell you, there's no BS to the art of debate. And we're going to talk a little bit about debate. And we're going to talk a little bit about Yale University a little bit later on. And I expect that today or tomorrow, hopefully by the end of the week at the latest, Front Page Magazine, frontpagemag.com, will be running an article that I wrote for them. And I come up with the titles. The editor sometimes changes the title. They don't change anything in the body of it unless they catch a misspell or a grammatical error. But once in a while, they'll kind of change the title slightly. But the working title I gave them is Yale Law School Recruits and Trains Lawyer Warriors. And the subtitle, Mission, Wage Lawfare to Effect Change Across Every Sector of Society. The other side doesn't want debate. And so when I was on a program the other day, the host said, you know, when you speak about the Republicans and you upset my listeners, and I said, wait a minute. If you disagree with me, that's cool. Do your homework. Check it out. We had this conversation off air. And I said, if I upset people, I'm sorry, but maybe they either need to tell me I'm wrong in their mind or find out why I'm wrong. You don't know your side of an argument better than when you have to defend it in the debate. In fact, I had a couple of debate coaches, and they were fabulous. One of the speech teachers I had actually taught JFK at Harvard, believe it or not. And they would tell us that we're not going to tell you which side of the argument you're going to be on until 30 minutes before the debate. What do you think of that? Because you don't know your side until you understand your opponent's side. That's what America was founded on. We don't have to agree. We only have to agree that we have that right to be heard and the right to articulate our ideas, because open debate, to me, is the equivalent of intellectual capitalism. You bring your ideas to the marketplace of that debate, and the customers, the audience, the judges decide which product they want to buy, which concept they're happier with, based on the arguments that we provide, the facts that we provide, and how we provide those facts. I don't think anybody should be able to graduate from high school or college without spending at least an entire year as an active participant on a debating team. And what has happened in America today is to shut down debate. It's either my way or no way. We will compromise. You will do it my way, and I will do it my way. It's got to stop, folks, because when you kill the First Amendment, you kill America. You kill freedom. This is Orwellian. If you want to know what's going on in America, go out and get 1984. It's a short book. You will immediately look at that book. You will see what Orwell laid out and say, oh, my God, it's happening right now in these United States of America. I don't like labels. He's a Democrat. He's a conservative. No, I'm conservative on some issues. I'm liberal on others, libertarian on others, and maybe a Martian on some other ones because I have some strange ideas occasionally. But that's the whole point. So when people say, well, you're contradicting my audience, the purpose to this program, the purpose to my own show, the programs I go on, isn't to be part of an amen crowd. That's not why we do this. This is supposed to be an educational experience. A French philosopher by the name of Voltaire very wisely said that you judge a person's intelligence by the questions that they ask. The biggest return that we get from the space program is the next set of questions. For how long did our astronomers, human astronomers, believe that the Earth was the center of the universe? Then they said, you know, it's the sun that's at the center of the universe. Then they said, well, the sun is only one star, and the universe consists of the Milky Way galaxy, and then Hubble got launched. And Hubble literally and figuratively was an eye-opener, because suddenly we realized that there were billions, if not trillions, of galaxies. And each galaxy had billions and trillions of stars. So The more we learned, the more that we knew that we didn't know. The more that we learned, the more that we realized that we're not quite as big, important as we thought we were. All we are, folks, are the equivalent of microorganisms that inhabit a mote of dust suspended in the infinity of space, and our lifespans last but for a blink of an eye. So how big can anyone's ego be? The late, great Carl Sagan, I had the privilege of admitting him at Kennedy Airport. He was an astrophysicist. He was very popular on The Tonight Show, very well known. He was behind the Voyager program, and those spacecraft are now hurtling out of the solar system. Sounds like science fiction. Launched in the 70s, they still work, unlike the average dishwasher or refrigerator that probably doesn't last 5 years. Interesting. Built by Americans, I might add. Americans. We didn't call some other country for their people. And Sagan said that the study of astronomy is character building because you realize your place in the universe. We're not as big and as important as we'd like to believe we are, especially the Nimrods we elect to elected office from both parties. Is there anything I'm saying you would disagree with, James?
Absolutely not. It's, you know, we've talked about this a bunch of different times. When it comes to politics in Washington, D.C., there's no difference. There's no difference in them. You can put them in a bag, mix them up, pull one out, and it's going to be just the same as all the rest.
Yes, heads we win, tails heads they win, tails we lose. That seems
right
to be the choice. Or when Obama was running against McCain, this young lady whose show I was on, I was a regular on her show, she said, well, he didn't want to see win. I said, wow, what a choice, cancer or a heart attack. And she couldn't stop laughing. She said she wound up spending half her show mopping up her mascara because she was laughing so hard it was running down her cheeks. Look, the politicians are not doing the bidding for the average American. And I thought of something interesting. We're told that there's three branches to the government, the executive, the legislative, and judiciary. Well, you know, it dawned on me there's actually a fourth branch and the most important branch, and we never talk about it. You know what the fourth branch of the government is supposed to be?
It should be the electorate.
We the people, that's right. Citizen, according to the founding fathers, was the most important job in this government. So what is all this nonsense, this BS about the judiciary, the legislative, and the executive, and not a peep about the 330 million Americans who constitute the body politic and the populace of this country? We've been left out in the cold by a government that could care less about us. They see us as speed bumps. And with all the talk about packing the court, Joe Biden and his cronies are packing the country. Think about what's happening. Joe Biden, in giving up the sovereignty of our country, is violating the law. And we always get these arguments. Oh, wait a minute. That's unconstitutional. Okay, Article 4, Section 4. Look it up, folks. Under Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution of the United States of America, every state is to be provided with a republican form of government and protected against invasion and domestic violence. That's constitutional. And if you don't think what's happening on our borders, and it's not just the Mexican border, is an invasion, then you need to go out and invest in a good dictionary. We are being invaded. Invasion has been aided, abetted, encouraged, induced, etc., by our own government. By the way, that's a violation of Title 8, United States Code, Section 1324. So we've got people flowing into this country. We're clueless as to who they are. We don't know if they're gang members. We don't know if they have dangerous communicable diseases. We don't know if they're terrorists. We don't know if they're fugitives from justice. If they work, they're going to take Americans' jobs and suppress wages. If they don't work, we're going to have to provide them with subsistence. President Trump actually went after this notion of public charge. That's a ground for exclusion. If you go to Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, it lists the categories of aliens to be excluded from the United States. And unlike the crap you get to hear in the mainstream media, this has nothing to do with race, religion, or ethnicity. If it did, I couldn't have enforced those laws for 30 seconds, let alone 30 years. It starts out with aliens who have dangerous communicable diseases, which gets us to Title 42, and we're going to talk about that momentarily, right? Ellis Island was a quarantine station. At the time that it was built, here's a fun fact, Ellis Island was built on an already existing island, but it needed to be made bigger. And it was around that time that New York City was building the subway system. So all the rocks and debris that were tunneled out to make room for the subways were put on barges and added to create Ellis Island. And Ellis Island had 42 hospital buildings on that complex at its peak. It was the biggest hospital complex in the United States. And the concern was that we don't bring people into the country who would make us sick, who had dangerous diseases. Families were unceremoniously split up at Ellis Island. Mental illness was another ground. If you couldn't support yourself, you weren't getting in. And they didn't have the kind of medical equipment we have today. So if you read the story of Ellis Island, it's kind of interesting. They had this grand staircase leading into the Grand Hall. The grand staircase was there because they didn't have the kind of equipment we have today. It was actually a cardio test. They stationed people strategically along the staircase, and if you were wheezing and breathing heavily trying to get up the stairs, you were sent back to your country. What do you think of that, folks? Because if you couldn't climb a flight of stairs, you sure as heck couldn't do a day's labor. That was how it ran. And if you go to the rest of the reasons why someone should be excluded, if they're criminals or spies or terrorists or human rights violators or war criminals or fugitives from justice, you are excludable. If you traffic in drugs or human beings, you are excludable. If you're likely to become a public charge or take the job of an American, you're excludable. What's unreasonable about that? What category of exclusion do you think we should eliminate? Terrorists? Human traffickers? Drug smugglers? People who profit off of prostitution? What do you want to eliminate? You tell me. Because that's what's in the law that they want to change. And the biggest thing they want to change, they both parties, is that Americans are supposed to get first crack at the jobs. Oh, my God, what are you thinking? Americans? Who gives a rat's tail about Americans? See, companies used to look at the American school system and said, this better be a good school system because those kids are going to be our employees in 10 years. Now, they want Americans to be as dumb as possible, so we buy the crappy garbage that they peddle so they can bring in workers from the third world to displace American workers because third world workers will work for a third the wage under worse conditions with no fringe benefits. That's what's happened. And you have politicians who go to Washington, and we talk about the lobbyists. The politicians are the lobbyists. Bob Goodlatte, the former Republican chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, is an immigration lawyer. He made his money on H-1B visas. And guess what he pushed all the time that he was the chairman of the judiciary? We need more H-1B visas. Of course, feather your own nest, Bob. And his son, he told me, fool that he is, my son would love to see thousands of brilliant Indian programmers come to America. This guy's a Republican, a conservative. Really? And what did he say? My son would love to have tens of thousands of brilliant Indian programmers. They said, what about the brilliant Americans? Do they chop liver? That was the end of the meeting. Is that what's good for America? So this notion of taking down the borders began with Jimmy Carter, who said we're not going to use the word illegal alien. We're going to call them undocumented immigrants so we could change the public perception. He ordered immigration agents to not arrest illegal aliens during the census. Why is that? Because it was gerrymandering. The big cities that tended to be the Democrat strongholds were attracting the lion's share of the illegal alien population. So if you counted them when they reapportioned the seats in the House and when they reapportioned the electoral votes, guess where they went? To the Democrats in the big cities, right? So this is gerrymandering. And then, of course, Ronald Reagan comes along. It's kind of like Louis Black did this whole big routine about Washington, and it's really very funny. He said, the Democrats and Republicans, when they get together, look out. The Democrats are the party of no ideas. The Republicans are bad ideas. So the Democrat gets up and says, I have a bad idea, and the Republican says, I can make it crappier. Okay? That's where we are. Reagan comes along, and what does he do? Gives us the first amnesty. Gives us the visa waiver program, gave us the diversity visa signed into law by George Herbert Walker Bush. And everyone says, oh, you can't say that about Ronald Reagan. He was fooled by the Democrats. I said, well, he's the president. He takes responsibility. But I don't buy that. because this is what the Chamber of Commerce wants. And why does it make people angry if I tell you what's there? This is supposed to be educational so you understand the issue. The only person I trust 100% of the time, other than my wife and kids, is the guy that I'm looking at when I trim my beard in the morning. Politicians take any position that is, quote-unquote, politically expedient. That very phrase ought to tell you what we're dealing with. Politically expedient. Playing politics. That's what politicians do. Politicians should never be trusted. You need to always hold them accountable. Just they're slippery and they are magicians and they're good at creating illusions that have no bearing on reality or vice versa. And when I'm looking at what's happening in the Ukraine disaster, you could put it right at Joe Biden's doorstep. And I'm a registered Democrat. I haven't voted for a Democrat in years, and I've never voted a party line, nor should you. Please don't tell me that if only we could get the Republicans into office, everything will be hunky-dory, because you have a Republican woman by the name of Maria, and I don't have the name in front of me, running for Congress in Florida. She's a Republican and wants a massive amnesty for every illegal alien in the United States. So tell me, if she continues on in Congress, is that going to help us? What are we thinking? What are we thinking? It's not the left or the right. We need to vote for candidates who understand what we the people want and then deliver it. Not the illusion, but the reality. Okay? So when I hear this nonsense, wow, this isn't left-right, and I don't like labels. You want to label Mike Cutler? I have a good label you can slap on me, and I'll wear it proudly. Call me an American. Call me an American. This ought to be all part of the same team, Team America. Because if you think the Republicans are looking out for your welfare, you've lost your mind. If you think the Democrats are looking out for you, start hanging mattresses on the walls of your house because you're going to hurt yourself. They're not on our side, folks. Believe me, they're not. And what Joe Biden did in Afghanistan, and what Joe Biden did at the border, and when you look at all the corruption and his son and the money from Ukraine and China, why do you think this didn't happen under Trump? Now, I don't think Trump was always right. I'm not one of those guys. I have some friends, and I've jokingly said that if Donald Trump walked into their houses and relieved himself on their table, they'd call it a centerpiece, okay? That's not Mike Cutler, okay?
That's true.
That's
love right there.
Ignore, isn't it, though? But you know what I'm saying, James.
Yeah.
I'm glad I could get you to laugh. It's hard to laugh at this era. But the point of the matter is he was right on immigration. It's more simplistic than he made it more simplistic than it is. The real key to immigration is interior enforcement, not the Mexican border as much as interior enforcement and the visas that we give out. You know, I've testified before, I think it was around 17 hearings in the House and Senate. The very first hearing I did was about visa fraud and immigration fraud because of the 93 terror attacks. The Mexican border had nothing to do with 9/11. The Mexican border had nothing to do with San Bernardino attack, with nothing to do with the Boston Marathon attack. It's not to say that we've got to be careful, that we have to. And we know that Hezbollah is working with human traffickers to flood drugs and people into our country, including sleeper agents. So goodness gracious, that's a dangerous damn border. But interior enforcement is the key. And there is no interior enforcement under Alejandro Mayorkas, and I wrote about him. I said that if he gets the job of head of Homeland Security, it'll become the Department of Homeland Surrender. And actually, if you read my articles, you'll find out that DHS was turned into the Department of Homeland Surrender by none other than George W. Bush, who violated the Homeland Security Act when he created DHS. Immigration was never, ever supposed to be divided in half. I know I was having meetings and conversations with members of Congress unofficially. I was an agent, but I did so as a civilian. We're entitled to talk to members of Congress. They're our employees. I like to talk to my employees. And I generally use their first name off the bat so we establish that employer-employee relationship, if you get my drift. Okay? But they wanted to strengthen immigration enforcement. Some of them did. And, of course, most of them wound up with their campaigns getting defunded. Think about that. But immigration was never supposed to be cut down the middle with Customs and Border Protection and ICE. And the mere fact that immigration was folded in with Customs and Agriculture and Secret Service and ATF, that was a violation of the Homeland Security Act. This was done, in the words of John Hostetler, who was the Republican chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee, done in such a way that we wound up unable to secure the borders, enforce the law, protect the American people, because Bush gave America immigration incoherence. Those are the words from John Hostetler, Republican chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee back in the early 90s. I was at a hearing where he used that very phrase. So please understand, what Biden is doing is only the last nail in the coffin on the immigration system, and we've been seeing it right along. Interior enforcement was the key, and we never had more than about 2,000 immigration agents for the entire country. Think of that number. Biden wants to have 80,000 Internal Revenue agents to go after tax cheats, but doesn't care if people cheat on their immigration paperwork. In fact, Mayorkas said, if you lie on your application for citizenship and we make you an American, we will take no action against you because you deserve to be protected. So you're protected against lying to the government if you're an alien, but God help you if you make a mistake on your tax return because they want to hire an army of IRS agents who will turn you upside down until they get the pocket lint out of your pockets. Think about that. Think about the fact that you have an administration that thinks that American parents who don't want critical race theory taught to their children are domestic terrorists, while they ignore the terrorists who are flowing into our country from all over the world. And no one's making them accountable. Where are the Republicans? Think about where America has gone that Disney really wants to groom children to become sexual creatures when they're, what, 5 years old? Are you serious? I wouldn't go to Disney if you gave me everything for free and paid me. I stopped dealing with Disney when they fired American computer programmers and brought in foreign replacements and then had the chutzpah to have the Americans train their replacements if they wanted their severance packages. And then afterwards they said, you know, we made a mistake. We should have given them the severance package without making them train their replacements. Really? That was when I said I will not buy a single product that's associated with Walt Disney. It means no movies, no videos, no toys, buckus. And we need to do this to every company that does that. I was going to buy the X chair. We got the government stimulus check. I said to my wife, I need a good chair. I sit in the office on my big fat rear end too long. I have a lousy chair that's broken. I'm going to invest in a good chair. I called them up. I was ready to place the order. I said, by the way, where do you make this? And they said, outside the United States. I said, really? I hung up the phone. I went out and I got myself an Aeron chair, which I've always lusted after. They have them in many TV studios because that's made inside the United States, period. No qualifications. We as Americans should be doing this routinely. And if you have an afternoon when you have nothing else to do and you want to have some chuckles, call up a company, tell them you're interested in their product, ask them where they make it, and when they say China, hang up on them. Imagine if thousands of people called companies every day and did that. You'd be sending them a message. You know, there's 300 million Americans. We have 535 characters in Congress between the House and Senate. I think we have them outnumbered. What do you think, James? Why we are allowing them to run roughshod over us is beyond me. What do you think of that?
I think that to a certain extent in modern times, there is apparently a larger percentage of the population than I thought here in America that actually think these guys know what they're talking about. When they listen to CNN or they see these fools on CNN or any of the cable news networks, I think they listen to them and they go, that's right. You know, they think they're listening to David Brinkley. They think they're listening to Walter Cronkite or Frank Reynolds or any of the giants of the day.
Eric Severide, yep. That's
Eric
right.
Severide would be another good one. Yeah, I mean, it's not there. I mean, it's just simply what we have today.
And by the way, what happened to is slogans. We're going to control that border. I mean, look at Ted Cruz with his nonsense, right? For America to lead, we need to bring in the world's best and brightest. And he actually pushed me. I said, what is that about? I said, I come from Brooklyn, and where I come from, we have a name for the world's best and brightest. We call them Americans. And he went berserk. this idea of importing an army of foreign workers, we're supposed to have nuclear nonproliferation. How did it spread? We've educated foreign students in physics. Do you know that on February 24th, 1998, the Senate Judiciary Committee held a hearing about foreign terrorists operating in the United States? And believe it or not, you have the Senate saying, wait a minute, we shouldn't be giving this kind of training to people that come from countries that sponsor terrorism. Think about that. That was in 1998. And that was Dianne Feinstein making that statement, who wound up with a Chinese spy driving her around for 20 years. She talked about how the chemicals to build the bomb that blew up the Trade Center in 93 were acquired by a Middle Eastern man who had gotten a job at Allied Chemical. She said, maybe we should end the visa waiver program. I agreed. Maybe we shouldn't be giving visas to aliens to come from countries that sponsor terrorism. Sounds like what Trump said. I agree. Except now, of course, they've spread out. And to this day, let's be fair about this. Let's be fair and honest, if not fair and balanced. How many times have you heard Fox News say, oh, Trump, who excluded the aliens from Muslim-majority countries? That's not what it was about. In fact, Obama used that same list. The countries were Muslim-majority, but they weren't the biggest Muslim-majority countries. The three most populous Muslim-majority countries were not on the list: India, Pakistan, and Indonesia. This wasn't about Islam. This was about countries that were affiliated with terrorism, where for one reason or another, we could not properly vet their citizens who wanted to come here, period. But to this day, Fox News will say Muslim-majority countries. And when they talk about immigration, they choose up sides, pro-immigrant or not. How are you pro-immigrant when you want immigration anarchy? I'm pro-immigrant, okay? Because I have seen it firsthand as an agent, the most likely victims of criminal aliens who enter the United States are the immigrants who live with them in those ethnic immigrant communities, not just from Latin America. It was terrible when Trump said there's a lot of bad hombres out there. I said, boy, could you be any dumber than that? There's a lot of bad people out there from every country on the planet, because just as all human beings bleed red when we are injured, it's just the way it is. Every race, every religion, every ethnicity has the good, the bad, and the ugly, because we all have the same human nature. And I got an award from the government of Japan. I don't think they are Latino. I could be mistaken. I'm going to go back into my computer later on, but I somehow don't think they're Latino. I work closely with the Israeli National Police. My first fraud investigation was supposed to be a nothing case. I wound up tripping over a terror plot in Israel back in 1976. We prevented the bombing of an oil refinery. I don't think Israelis are Latino. This has nothing to do with skin color. These lying politicians, forgive the redundancy, have turned it into a skin color issue. But it never was. It is not. Let's be clear. And so what Biden has done, it was to send a message around the world. You know, everyone wants to know what the other guy's doing. That's why there are spies out there. And the spies are looking and probing for weaknesses. If we attack here, if we attack there, how can we do harm here? How will they likely respond to us, right? So I want to read to you. This is from a website called The Hill. It's an online reputable news organization. I don't always agree with the way they see the world, but they're pretty good. And so The Hill, on February 26th this year, published an article: former Russian president threatens to retaliate with sanctions against the West. And I'm going to just cut to the chase. Let me just get to this. Yes. Well, you know what? I'm going to read the whole beginning, because it'll give you context. So this is that article from The Hill. The deputy head of Russia's Security Council said Saturday that Russia may respond in a hostile way to the sanctions from the U.S. and European Union, or the EU, the Associated Press reported. In a post on a Russian social media site, Dmitry Medvedev said that Russia is considering leaving its latest nuclear arms deal with the U.S., cutting off diplomatic ties with the U.S. and the EU, and freezing the assets of Western countries after many of them condemned Russia and Russia's invasion of Ukraine on Thursday. Medvedev added that Russia was mulling restoring the death penalty after being removed from a European rights group. Quote, we are being driven out everywhere. punished and threatened, but we don't feel scared, Medvedev, the former president of Russia, said. By the way, folks, Medvedev was the guy that Obama was talking to in that infamous hot mic incident where he said, we'll have to wait till after I'm reelected, I'll be more flexible. And it turned out that Obama was basically a contortionist, right? But it was Medvedev that he made that statement to. And then here's the critical statement that Medvedev said. Medvedev claimed that the U.S. had been, quote, cowardly, unquote, in leaving Afghanistan and was using sanctions against Russia to make up for shameful decisions, quote, it had made in the past, according to the wire service. He described the Western sanctions as a show of political impotence.
Yeah,
you don't think
totally. I think you got
that
it. Yeah.
Our enemies looked at that Ukraine, at the Afghanistan withdrawal, which we turned tail and ran as we never have in the history of this nation. And what did China and North Korea and Iran and Russia take away from that? The president is a boob. The president has no sense of strategy. He's incompetent. And if we push him, he will fall over like the empty suit that he is. That was what emboldened Russia. Now, you couple that with how our energy policies ended our ability to stop Russian oil from flowing into Germany. Put all these pieces together, and you wind up with a bloodbath. You wind up with a bloodbath. Now, here's something that I find interesting. We have a bloodbath across America today. You look at the bail reform, so-called, criminal justice reform, so-called, cities that were once peaceful. New York City used to be America's biggest, safest city. New York is a scary place. I'm a native New Yorker. I was born in New York. I went to Brooklyn College, still living in the same house since I was 11. And I have a Ring doorbell that my son put in. Two of my kids are engineers, in fact. That was my original plan. And they give you alerts. I can't tell you how many times the alert goes off. Stabbing, shooting, robbery, shooting, stabbing, carjacking, shooting, carjacking. Day in, day out. Why? Because the bad guys know that there's no consequences to their actions. People are dying. Now, a police officer, not long ago, a female cop, and I don't know how she screwed up this badly, reaching for her taser, pulled out her actual firearm and killed an individual. Terrible situation. In the heat of the moment, she made a terrible mistake. She's in jail. In the heat of the moment, her life was on the line. The lives of her partners were on the line. The lives of the public on the line. I've been in life and death decisions. One of the things I'm most thankful for is that I've never, ever shot another human being. I came close on a half dozen occasions. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. God's honest truth. I had sweat running down my back in that split second before I almost had to pull the trigger. You do not ever, ever want to do that. I love target shooting. I find it enjoyable, skill, and I love improving skills, whether it's shooting or driving, you name it, debating. I love it. But the idea of pulling the trigger on another human being, I had a dog attack me once when we were executing a warrant. I had to get into a backyard. This big dog, about an 80-pounder, charged at me. I used to carry a handkerchief in my back pocket. Thank God I had one there because that's exactly where the dog bit. He drew blood. I mean, he absolutely got punctured on the rear end, but the handkerchief helped to absorb some of the bite, and I wound up in the emergency room getting a wound cleaned out and getting antibiotics. And so I never shot the dog. One of the people said, you didn't shoot him? I said, no, I smacked him. In those days, I carried a big old 357. I smacked him upside the head with the 357, and if he came back and was going to really go at me, of course I would shoot him. I'm not going to stand there and become his meal. But you don't want to shoot another person. You don't want to shoot a dog, right? And we're very careful. I used to say a little prayer every day I went on duty. Please, dear God, let me not need my gun today. But you have politicians who are making decisions and judges who are making decisions, and they know it's going to get people killed, and they go to sleep well at night. And I want to know how they sleep at night, and I want to know how in the world we make them accountable. When you can allow narcotics to flood into America, when you can allow gangs like MS-13, that I began investigating MS-13 back in the early 90s. And they were a tiny problem. But by the time Obama got done with his unaccompanied minors nonsense, America became flooded with MS-13. And their slogan is rape, kill. I'm trying to remember exactly how they put it. But the idea was they were winning over converts. And the youngest people that they bring into that group are like 12 and 13-year-old kids, raping and killing. Could you imagine that? And we're allowing them into our country. And when people were posting detainers, when immigration agents posted detainers, you had local law enforcement saying, we're not going to honor the detainer. And they turned people loose. And within hours, in some cases, they went out and shot and killed people. They were able to shoot and kill people because they were released from custody. But those bosses within law enforcement never faced any consequences. The politicians who promulgated those policies never faced any consequences. People were getting killed, people were getting wounded, and nothing happened to the facilitators of that violent crime. But let one police officer in the heat of the moment, where you've got a split second to act or maybe die, make a bad decision, you're going to face consequences. You're looking at jail. You're looking at a loss of your job, a loss of your income, all because in the heat of the moment, you made a decision that was determined afterwards to have not been appropriate. But politicians can make every bad decision. We can have 100,000 people die of drug overdoses because our government refuses to act appropriately. And what consequences do the politicians face? Zippo, nada, as in not a damn thing.
And in the meantime, in the meantime, with these policies that they implement, what they fundamentally do is they breed the fear of consequences and arrest out of the career and the habitual criminals.
Oh, and you're putting cameras on cops and telling them, you may not touch that guy's throat if you're arresting him. I've been in fights with people. Now, let me tell you something that most people don't realize unless you've been there. Do you realize that when someone resists arrest, the law enforcement officer is in a fight for his or her life? Now, if you wonder what I'm talking about, those officers are armed. If the bad guy can overpower you and get to your firearm, you are dead. Your partner is dead. People walking by may be dead. So the guy that resists arrest is a threat to your survival. So you're going to be there with your camera on, worried that if this guy is punching me in the face and has me by my throat, if my hand goes near his neck, I'm going to be criminally prosecuted. Think about that one, folks. Try that one on for size. Imagine a wrestling match like that. So what happens is you have cops that don't want to make arrests anymore. Why? Big cases, big problems. Little cases, little problems. No cases, no problems. I've seen people blow red lights in front of a police car, marked police car, waiting at a red light. A guy zips through the intersection, and you're waiting for the cop to go chase him, and guess what happens? What's in it for the cop? He's going to pull the guy over, and the guy is going to get nasty and jump out of the car, and we're off to the races, and that cop can lose his life or lose his job. So we blew a red light. Nobody got hurt. They didn't see it, quote unquote. This is how it begins. There's a concept in law enforcement called broken windows that Rudy Giuliani subscribed to. I didn't always agree with Rudy. I interacted with him when he was the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District here in New York. But broken windows was a concept that was developed by psychologists, social workers who were involved with law enforcement. In fact, I believe it was a cop by the name of Schlossberg, Psychologist with a Gun, I believe, was the book he wrote. I could be mistaken. I don't want to get it wrong, but I do remember. And what he had said was, if you don't take care of the little problems, you lose control. It's kind of like what I said to Congress when I did one of my very first hearings, that you get only one opportunity to make a first impression. So if you drive by a dilapidated neighborhood that has broken windows in the buildings, then you think, hey, I can grab a brick and break another window. Let's see how good my throwing arm is. There's no consequences. The building already has 20 knocked out windows. Well, in that situation, you wind up with the squeegee characters that come to your car. I actually had a guy try to clean my windshield with a dirty diaper he found in the street. That one on to size. Yes. So you're sitting in the car, and many of these guys would pull weapons on drivers and pull them out of the car and carjack them because these were war zones. And when Giuliani came in, Times Square was a war zone, all the strip joints and all the prostitution and all the drugs. He cleaned it up. Everyone said it couldn't be done. He did it. It was by broken windows. You go after the small problems. You go over to a car. You get aggressive with the driver. The cops come, put you in the back of their car, and you're going to spend the night in jail. So they said, gee, this isn't such a good idea. You steal the car, you're going to go to jail. In New York, there was a big problem with car theft. Why? Because people weren't even be held overnight. They'd rob a car. If they got away with it, they made some money from the guy they gave it to. If they got caught, they'd be in like a penalty box for a couple of hours. The car theft went through the roof. Consequences to no action. So the idea in the broken windows is if you go after the relatively minor crimes, you convince everybody we're serious about any violations of law. And then they don't do it. By the way, do you remember what Biden told Putin? That we would accept minor intrusions into Ukraine? I couldn't believe I heard him say it, but he said it. We will accept minor intrusions. No, we will accept no intrusion. You put your toe over the line, we're coming to you. We will accept minor intrusions. What does that mean? What's a minor intrusion? It didn't involve an atom bomb? See, Biden encouraged all this bloodshed. You can hang a big chunk of it on his ineffective, gutless, feckless administration and philosophies. I always said that our president should be a gunslinger. Now, I don't mean that literally, but what I mean is the bad guys ought to look at the president of the United States and say, this guy is just nutty enough to do what he threatens to do. When we were training and we were going after some of the worst criminals, drug traffickers are right up there with terrorists. They are violent. They're heavily armed. They are looking at, you know, life in jail. I mean, what do they have to lose? And many of them suffer, for lack of a better term, brain rot from having used so much in terms of narcotics. They're not all there. They suffer brain damage from the use of drugs over time. And so when you go in, you don't gently knock on the door and say, sir, I would greatly appreciate it if you would have a seat in that corner. Just please sit down, be calm. No, if you do that, they will shoot you. You come in with a superiority of firepower, superiority of people. We are armed to the teeth. We're wearing, you know, flak jackets and carrying body bunkers, those big shields you've seen, with long guns. And you come in screaming at the top of your lungs, face down on the ground or else. And they look at you and they say, this guy's crazy enough to shoot me. And so that's one of the ways you prevent the need for violence, by making it clear that you're capable of being violent. The Strategic Air Command kept us safe from the nuclear threat that Russia posed by doing what? By being armed to the teeth and flying nuclear weapons to the borderline of Russia, making it clear that it wouldn't take much for us to cross that line and deliver the weapons. And what was the motto of the Strategic Air Command, if you remember, James?
Peace is our profession. That's right. I was getting ready to say the tactical error for, but yeah, that's it. The price of peace is constant vigilance. I think that was Goldwater said that. And there's no other way around it. Wishing won't make it any different. We face just as many existential threats today as we have since 1941 up to the present time. And
We don't have anybody to deal with it. Well, so everyone wants to compare Zelensky to Churchill. So I went online, and Churchill delivered his Iron Curtain speech in Missouri with President Truman, and this was on March 5th, 1946, right after he lost re-election for prime minister. And he said some interesting things here, and I'll just give you the most significant. Let me just get to where I want to be on this. He wanted a special relationship between the United States and Great Britain. And then Churchill spoke of communist fifth. Well, here he says this. In organizing and policing the post-World War, particularly warned against the expansionistic policies of the Soviet Union. Interestingly, right? In addition to the Iron Curtain that had descended across Eastern Europe that he spoke about, Churchill spoke of a communist fifth columns that were operating throughout Western and Southern Europe. Drawing parallels with the disastrous appeasement of Hitler prior to World War II, Churchill advised that in dealing with the Soviets, there was, quote, nothing which they admire so much as strength, and there is nothing for which they have less respect than for military weakness, unquote. That was Churchill. And here we are in 2022, and what are we witnessing? Weakness by a president who can't be trusted, whose biggest weapon is his mouth. You never know when it's going to go off and say something really stupid and dangerous. And utter gutlessness where it came to the way we pulled out of Afghanistan, the policies on the southern border. You look at a president who is incompetent and probably corrupt. And Russia looks at that, and they also probably have ways of blackmailing not only Biden, but maybe other members of Congress. When you look at all the money that flows into campaign coffers, it's remarkable to me that when you listen to the political nonsense that goes on, you know, Joe Schmidlap is apparently a serious candidate for the Senate because he has amassed a war chest of $3.9 million. When did we ever hear nonsense like that? When I was growing up, when I went to high school, no one ever talked about how much money had been raised by a candidate. All they said is that the guy had filed for the candidacy and had submitted the appropriate number of signatures and was on the ballot. That was it. Now it's like a box score at a game. How many home runs? How much money? So this is really the buying and selling of public office. I actually think they need a new position within our government, that of the official auctioneer. Right? I think the guy from the Mecum Auto Auction does a pretty good job, so I don't know. I think he'd be okay. But what kind of nonsense is this? It's not about ideology. It's not about governance. It's about winning elections, and it's about amassing a war chest of money. And when people give you that kind of money, don't you think that they're expecting something in return? I wasn't allowed to accept a cup of coffee when I was on duty. And these people are taking with both hands. And you look at Biden, and you look at his son, And you look at Swalwell, that he had a sexual relationship with a female Chinese intelligence agent who then got one of her colleagues into his office, and he made introductions for them, and he still sits on the Foreign Relations Committee. Are you serious? Could you imagine an agent saying, oh, yeah, I slept with that girl, and I found out that she was a spy. Do you think I could have my security clearance? Do you think I could keep my – they'd probably look to indict me. We were warned, do not even date a young lady if she's not legally in the country. We had an agent marry a girl. He had arrested her, and somehow she stayed in touch with him. He told the agency about it. She got lawful status, but the fact that he dated her when she was illegal, he lost his job and he lost his pension. And you have – Swalwell, or I like to call him Swallowwell, still has a seat, still sits on the Foreign Relations Committee, having had a lengthy relationship with a Chinese spy? I mean, what does it take to get into trouble except make phone calls if your name is Donald Trump? Think about what I'm saying to you. And I'm not saying this in support of Donald Trump. I'm telling you this because I am nauseated by what I'm witnessing, by what's supposed to be our government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Now, I know there are some conservatives who say to me, Mike, we should stay out of this whole business with Ukraine. Zelensky isn't the good guy you might think he is. And I've heard all kinds of nonsense. Let me tell you what my concerns are. And again, sharing some personal insight with you. I'm Jewish. My family was decimated in the Holocaust. I was named for my mother's mother, who could not get out of Poland and lost her life because of our religion. You know, when I hear this nonsense about white privilege, every group of human beings has suffered horrifically because of stupidity and bigotry throughout time. The human species should be smarter than it is, but it isn't. Bigotry is the ultimate expression of stupidity and foolishness. If you want to dislike somebody for who they are as a person, that makes sense. I told that to my children. If you don't like Mary, that's cool if it's because Mary is nasty or Mary steals things or Mary starts fights. Oh, yeah, it's cool. You don't have to like her. But please don't tell me she's of the wrong religion or the wrong race. There is no such animal, okay? We judge people, and our system of justice depends on the actions of the individual, not the larger group they belong to. That's why Lady Justice is supposed to be blindfolded, but now they've taken that blindfold off. So we hear all kinds of nonsense that makes no sense, scapegoating, you know, whites. Well, that's how the Holocaust started. The Jews are the problem. If you can get rid of the Jews, the sun will shine and nobody will need Viagra ever again, right? That's how the Holocaust started. How's that?
Happy days are here again.
Happy days are here again, right? And so we had the Holocaust. And I knew many people who survived it, and they had those terrible tattoos when I was growing up. My mother came to America as a 13-year-old. And the reason I'm telling you the story is when I see those images of the train stations, it brings tears to my eyes. My mom died when I was 21, also had cancer. It was a nightmare. I was caring for both of my parents when I was in school. I was an only child, so I was working, going to school, and caring for two dying parents. And my mother always, at least once a month, twice a month, I'd hear her crying, and I'd run into the bedroom. I'd say, what's wrong? And she was having nightmares about kissing her mother goodbye for the last time at the train station when she was all of 13 years old. My mother came to America as a 13-year-old. Her father abandoned her, so she wound up living by herself in a rooming house and supported herself by working in a sweatshop making umbrellas for $3 a week. Imagine being in a strange country, can't speak the language, but somehow she got by and became the chief buyer of a dress company by the time she was in her 20s with a fourth grade education. And that company was so successful that during the Depression, the owner of that company, her boss, became one of Roosevelt's dollar a year men because he was so successful. And he frequently pointed to my mother, who was only in her 20s with a fourth grade education, and said, she's the reason I've been so successful because she's brilliant. So that's who raised me, my mom and dad. My dad was a tradesman. And I have nothing but admiration and respect for blue-collar America because they rock. They build this country. They build the roads. They build the airplanes and the cars and the trains and the houses and the factories and the hospitals and the schools. Without tradesmen, we'd be living under trees or in caves. So when I hear this crap about the work Americans won't do, we should tell every one of those damn politicians who has the gall to say that, you're fired. They're insubordinate. They don't get it. Don't tell me about the work Americans won't do. It enrages me on a scale you can't begin to imagine. And to me, engineers are actually professional blue-collar workers, right? They actually build things. Don't you love bankers? Did you ever know that three-card Monty was a product? When some bank says, we have a product, I think, really? Three-card Monty written on the back of a piece of paper is a product? I thought a product required an assembly line and wood, screws, metal, wires, something. It's not a scam. Between the banks and Wall Street and all these other scams that are profiting off of the drug trade, profiting off of the loss of jobs for Americans. And that's why you have homelessness, because as we flood America with more people, they need a place to sleep, which jacks up the price of housing, and we're firing Americans or cutting their wages because they're competing with third world workers. So now we have tons of homelessness. So lots of people at the top of the food chain are profiting royally while average Americans are getting shafted. But I'm off topic because the whole reason I'm telling you this about my mother is that when I look at what's happening at those train stations today with those refugees, it reminds me of my mom, who was never the same. She was damaged from her experience in the war, as you could imagine. She was here, but she couldn't get to her mother. My first wife died tragically of cancer when she was in her early 30s. Her mother was in a concentration camp, and she was damaged. She was the walking wounded. It was awful. She lost her whole family to the Nazi bastards. And I said to her, how did this happen? She said, well, we kept saying it can't get worse. So my concern is this, folks. If you want to be selfish, look at the Ukraine. Look at those children who survived. Some of them will become the walking wounded, like my mother-in-law for my first wife, or my own mother who suffered trauma, having to say goodbye to her mother at age 13, never to see her again. And others will become monsters. The level of trauma and violence that they've experienced is unimaginable. Unimaginable. And people have different ways of dealing with trauma. But please remember that old saying that abused children become abusive parents. And there will be among those kids who are witnessing the atrocities and the use of rockets against residential buildings, some of them are going to turn into monsters. They will become the nightmare for our children. They will become the nightmare for our grandchildren and for their children. We keep on repeating history. We've got to break the cycle. Whatever you might think of Zelensky or the Ukraine or the politics of the era, this is a global catastrophe by anyone's definition. And if we don't address this problem, it just keeps on perpetuating itself. And that's something that we really need to understand. You know, it's funny. There was a quote, again, Churchill, and I included this in an article that I wrote a while back. So let me read to you a quote from Sir Winston Churchill, very prescient, very, when the situation was manageable, it was neglected. And now that it is thoroughly out of hand, we apply too late the remedies which then might have effected a cure. There is nothing new in the story. It's as old as the Sibylline books. It falls into that long, dismal catalog of the fruitlessness of experience and the confirmed unteachability of mankind. Want of foresight and willingness to act when action would be simple and effective, lack of clear thinking, confusion of counsel until the emergency comes, until self-preservation strikes its jarring gong. These are the features which constitute the endless repetition of history. That quote comes from the speech that Winston Churchill gave to the House of Commons on May 2, 1935, as the storm clouds of war were gathering on the horizon. Or to put it more succinctly, as George Bernard Shaw said, we learn from history that we learn nothing from history. So when we witness what we're witnessing in Ukraine, the world needs to act. We might not want to act. I remember as a kid, you didn't want to have a fist fight, but sometimes there was just no solution. You could run, but you can't hide. And Putin and his cohorts are very dangerous. This is emboldening China. This is emboldening Iran. Think of what's going on with Iran and that nuclear catastrophe. It's emboldening China. The damage being done, not just to America, but to freedom around the world, is immeasurable. And when Zelensky said that Biden needs to realize that he's not just the president of the United States, but the president of the free world, he's right. And Joe Biden has always been and always will be, in my humble opinion, a not ready for prime time player. How he was elected, how a nation of 330 million people, some of them among the most brilliant in the world, could wind up electing a buffoon who is as trustworthy as I don't know what, is beyond reason. The American people need to take politics seriously. I mean, that's really what the problem is. And people say to me, well, I'm one person. I can't do anything. Well, Putin is one person. And look at what Putin has done. Joe Biden is one person. Look at the damage that that clown, for prime time, has done. Look at his cohort, Kamala Harris. Look at the leaders in our Congress who only could think about the equations of how do I get more money so I could win the next election. I approached a Republican chairman and said to him, you got to do something so that we don't keep on displacing American workers with foreign workers. And he said to me, I'm a numbers guy. Show me the numbers. I said, what numbers? Look at the unemployment lines. Look at the way that wages have declined. Look at the purchasing power of the average American. And he dismissed me with a wave of the hand and walked away. That was a Republican. It's amazing. And then you listen to these news people, and you were right. I was watching Fox and Friends. And all they're talking about is, well, the left, wants us to use electric cars. You know how expensive electric cars is. Of all the arguments I could mount against electric cars, that's the worst argument I ever heard. But they use it every chance they get because it's the only thing they know how to say. Do you know what's really most dangerous about the electric cars, James, that hasn't been addressed in the media, including on Fox?
What's that?
The power grid is entirely incapable of dealing with the stress that electric cars would put on it. power grid.
You know, Mike, at the charging stations where I live, and we have the, you know, that I don't know, I've never seen the damn things used, but you have the charging station, and right behind it, a diesel generator to power the charging station to turn on your electric car. I'm not making it up. It's probably like that everywhere.
I know. By the way, Michael Moore gets it sideways. I wish I could sit down with Michael Moore because he gets it right and then makes the wrong conclusion because he's a jackass. But he did a whole story about how coal-fired plants are generating electricity being used to charge the cars. Now, here's my point. If we get to the point and there's more and more work being done on nuclear fusion, that would be wonderful. That's totally clean energy. Then I'd be 101% in favor of electric cars. But right now, the power grid doesn't have the capacity to deal with electric cars if we start talking about millions of electric cars. That's the problem. That's why I wrote an article where I said that before any major immigration bills are proposed, at the very least, they should have to do an environmental impact study. Because every alien who comes to the United States needs much more than a pillow to sleep on. Every alien who comes here needs water and food and electricity. They create sewerage. They need housing, right? They need health care. They need transportation. They need infrastructure. If they're children, we're talking about schools. So why is no one talking about an environmental impact study when all we keep hearing about is green, 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 green? The only thing green here is the money that's going to go to the programs of these people that are hooked into the politicians pushing this travesty on us. Just like Solyndra, if you remember that beauty.
Or Fisker, yeah.
And so now here's the other thing. The average American questions nothing. And I think I've spoken about it on your program before, but I'm going to do it again. I wrote an article about the science Nazis talking about the Holocaust. Now, everyone knows that Einstein had to get out of Dodge because in Germany it wasn't a good idea to be Jewish back then. But what I didn't know until I saw a documentary and then I started doing my research, and that's what I ask all of you to do. See, I want you to question everything I tell you. And if you look at my articles, whether it's at Front Page or U.S. Incorporated, usinc.org, I always provide links to articles that provide the information to verify what I'm telling you. It's the equivalent of a footnote. Anybody could make a statement. But having mentioned my parents, I remember sitting at the dinner table with my mom and dad, and they were no-nonsense people. They would have given their lives in a heartbeat to save me. I mean, they couldn't have loved me more, and I couldn't have loved them more. They were amazing people. I hope I'm one-third the parent to my kids that they were to me. They were incredible. I miss them every day, and I stand on their shoulders every day, and I'm on the wrong side of 70, okay? So it's been a long time since I've been last with them. But if I ran my mouth at the dinner table, my pop would look over those glasses of his, and I used to call it the father look, and he could stop my heart, I swear, James. And he'd say to me, Mike, empty barrels make an awful lot of noise. And he would say it in that tone of voice. Because if I couldn't back up what I was saying, then his answer was, keep your mouth shut. And my mother used to look at me and say, my son better never, ever be a BS artist because I won't tolerate that. And all these people come out there and they spew utter nonsense. So I challenge you, do the research, do the homework. You think I'm wrong? Good. Look it up. Get back to me. My website is michaelcutler.net, okay? Get back to me. Let James know, and I'll be glad to answer your questions. I'm willing to have you challenged because I believe in debate. I believe in discourse. I believe in a back and forth. That's why they say heads work better than one, because two people see things from a slightly different perspective, and when you put your heads together with different ideas, you come up with solutions. It's called synergy, okay? So Einstein was under attack, and it was kind of like Antifa today. By the way, if the kids of today really want to be anti-fascists, they ought to go look at the newsreel footage from D-Day or the Japanese theater or all those American and allied boys. They were boys, let me tell you, and some women also, who were killed fighting the Nazis. They were the real anti-fascists. I mean, goodness gracious. They were the anti-fascists. They honor themselves falsely. They are the buffoons, and in fact, they are the fascists. But back then, these Nazi SOBs threatened Einstein. And the Nazi regime organized riots on campus wherever Einstein spoke. And he was talking about, guess what, his theories on relativity. And if you've been following science at all, it would appear that all of his theories, and by the way, they're theories, not facts. That's why when they say follow the science isn't static. It's always changing. 30 years ago, before Hubble was launched, we had no idea how many galaxies were out there. It was only 2 years ago, I believe, that we finally were able, using radio telescopes, to actually photograph a black hole, something that they thought might never be possible. These are game changers. Game changers. So we don't know what we don't know, and that's why science is a continuing quest that will never end. We will never have all the answers, right? But Einstein was there teaching and lecturing about his theories of relativity, and the Nazi regime, if this sounds familiar to you, with Fauci and all this other garbage, brought in two scientists who were experts in physics and had both been awarded the Nobel Prize for Physics. Think about that. Who got up and discredited Einstein and said he was dangerous because he was preaching, quote, Jewish science. And the crowds became enraged and violent. And he literally ran for his life. That's why Einstein left Germany. Some of his friends had been physically attacked and injured badly. And the funny thing was, if Einstein hadn't come to America, we might not have gotten the atom bomb, and Germany might have beaten us to it, and history might have gone in a very different and tragic direction. So when you hear this nonsense of follow the science, and there's another word that I worry about, because our adversaries are very, very smart. Don't ever underestimate your adversary. That's a fatal mistake. I always figure my adversary is stronger and smarter than I imagine. Do you remember not long ago when they suddenly started to say that companies were disruptive? They didn't say that they were revolutionary or game changers, but disruptive. And I thought, why in the world would being disruptive be a positive? When I was growing up, if your parents got a phone call from the principal's office and they said Johnny was disruptive, they weren't happy. But suddenly, disruptive was something that was worth celebrating. Well, I think that they were telegraphing the punch. We are going to be disruptive. And that is where we are today. And so I wrote my article, a sneak preview, spoiler alert here, and I hope everybody will check the article out. It should be up in a day or two at Front Page Mag. And I got a whole bunch of articles. I've been writing for Front Page for 14 years now. Actually, more than four. It's more than 14 years since 2014. So it's about 8 years that I've been writing for them, actually. But what was interesting, I don't know if you saw this, James, but Fox News reported on a riot at the Yale Law School because there was a debate sponsored by the Federalist Society, and the law students went nuts. Did you see that back in February?
No, I did not. Well, but I'm aware of the. This is part of that lawfare.
Yes. And,
initiative
and so
that they're trying out. Right.
Yep. And so here's something interesting. About 12 years ago, I was invited by that very same Federalist Society at Yale to participate in a debate on comprehensive immigration reform. Not unusual. I've been at Columbia. I've been at Chapman Law in California. That's when I was with Mike Chertoff and others. I've been all over the place, NYU Law School, Seattle, Washington. So I was happy to go, and it was a very nice event. In fact, when I walked into the building, I wish I had a smartphone so I could have taken a photograph because I got a kick out of it. Because when I walked into the main building of the Yale Law School, I walked into the building, and there was an easel with a life-size poster staring me in the face as you walked into the entranceway, and the poster was me. I thought, oh, my gosh, is this a riot? And it announced the fact that I was going to be on campus that evening for a debate, and I was very honored. And we went out. We had dinner afterwards, and the people who disagreed with me were respectful. They were courteous. We shook hands. It was very, very nice. It was what debate has always been, what debate is supposed to be. No more. It got so nasty that they had to call the police, and, of course, the lunatics who want to be lawyers, and this is one of America's most prestigious law schools, said that the conservatives had endangered their lives because it led to the presence of armed police officers on their campus, and police officers pose a threat to everyone's life. Now, I want everyone to just stop and soak this in. Yale Law School produces lawyers, no shock, but because it is high on the list, it's right up there with Yale and Harvard and Princeton and so forth, many of the Yale lawyers become heads of law firms. They go on to become judges, Supreme Court. They go on to be the CEOs of corporations, and they become law professors in their own right themselves. So defund police got everyone angry, and now they say, well, we can't do that. No, we really didn't mean that. We were kidding. No, you think we wanted to defund? No, it doesn't matter, because you could put 100,000 cops on the beat and tell them to make all the arrests they want. But if the lawyers refuse to prosecute, because the prosecutors are now acting more like defense attorneys than prosecutors, you're still going to have mayhem on the street, aren't you? And so it blew my mind. And then, spoiler alert, it turned out that there was an announcement made by Yale Law School this past February, February 21st. And what was the announcement? That Yale Law School would provide free college to the most needy students who are deserving of a free law education. I've had this debate with some of my conservative friends who don't believe in free college. I do, but only for Americans. If you want to break the cycle of poverty, education is the key. My mother only had a fourth grade education. My dad only had an eighth grade education. It was a different era, of course. But, you know, you have to go to high school, because 100 years ago, high school was the equivalent of a college degree today. So to keep pace with technology and knowledge and so forth, it's only reasonable that American kids should be able to get a free college education if they maintain educational standards. And if they're studying a course of study that contributes to society, and that doesn't mean women's studies. Now, you may not know this, James, but I did enjoy women's studies, but that was a weekend activity. It wasn't a classroom activity, okay?
I bet there was a lot of field work involved in that.
Lab was expensive, let me tell you. I am bad. Yes, I am. But all joking aside, if we need scientists and engineers and doctors and chemists, why not educate American kids and realize that if you can put a kid through that kind of an education, not only will his or her life be much better, but they won't need financial assistance. They won't need food stamps. They won't need subsidies. In fact, they will probably become taxpaying consumers who can contribute to the economy. They'll have more disposable income, and they will help to boost the economy. Everyone seems to have forgotten it, but in the 50s, that's how America flourished, because the middle class grew exponentially, and people had disposable income, so you had two cars in the driveway, and they were bought for cash, and the wheels were humming. Everyone seems to have forgotten that. Long range, it's in America's best interest that Americans earn a good paycheck, because then you spend less money on the welfare programs, provided you don't flood your country with foreign workers. And that's what we're doing now, because corporations, I mean, if you want to talk about corporate welfare, that's one of the biggest examples of corporate welfare, is the importation of an army of foreign workers, and not just the illegals. But in any event, I agree with the idea of free college, but Yale is not being altruistic. I'm going to read this paragraph, and when you get this article, I want everyone to forward it to everybody you know and ask them to forward it to everyone they know and become part of what I call my bucket brigade of truth. This is why they're doing it, and it's chilling. Listen carefully. This was the last paragraph of the press release, and I provide the link, by the way, in my article, because I do that with everything, sections of law, you name it. I want you to see what it is I'm saying and how I can back up what I'm saying. If I can't back it up, as my dad said, empty barrels make a lot of noise, right? So here's the paragraph. At Yale Law School, we prepare lawyers and leaders to face the most critical challenges of the future and affect change across every sector of society, said Gerken. She is the professor. We, quote, again quoting, we are committed to ensuring every student can fully immerse themselves in our vibrant intellectual experience and has the tools and resources they need to leave their mark on the world. The Hearst Horizon Scholarship Program cements our commitment to access and equity for all. This isn't about turning out competent lawyers who know how to apply the Constitution. This is about lawfare. And think about how law is an intrinsic part of everything, whether it's tort law, where you sue somebody or whatever, contract law, criminal law. Law is the rule book under which our society operates. And if you could turn loose an army of lawyers who have a real mission of changing everything, guess what you wind up with? What do you think of that?
Yeah, you wind up with socialism. You wind up with tyranny.
Now, think about socialism. It sounds so wonderful. To each according to his ability, to his needs, from each according to his ability. You remember as a kid your parents telling you about the difference between need and want to begin with?
Mm-hmm.
You may think you need that car, but no, you only want that car. You don't need that car, right? So that's item number one. Item number two is that there is no reward in communism. Everyone gets the same amount, supposedly, except, of course, the people at the very top, but we don't want to talk about that. So if there's no way of rewarding people for hard work, there's only one other way to get a beast or a human being to do what you want them to do. It's either the carrot or it's the stick.
The stick.
If there's no carrot, guess what they resort to? The stick. So my question, boys and girls, would you rather live under a carrot or would you rather live under a stick? And by the way, capitalism ain't what it used to be, especially since COVID. COVID has been transformational in many ways that many people don't even realize. Do you remember after COVID hit, you could not go to Joe's TV store, but you could go to Walmart or you could go to Target somehow? What do you think happened to Joe's little corner store? Bye-bye.
Yeah, it dried up.
What COVID did was to destroy the competition, meager as it was, because Joe's TV shop that only sells a dozen TVs in a month couldn't cut the same deals with Samsung or Sony or whomever that Walmart could, because Walmart buys 100,000 televisions in a month, and this poor guy buys 12. So you say, well, it's convenient. Okay, and that's true, and I've done that, by the way. Sure, I've known the guy since we were both kids. His father used to own the store. So I bought a TV from him, and I had to pay an extra $100, but instead of getting in my car and driving all the way out, they delivered it to me, and he was a block from my house. I could walk over, give him my credit card, and that afternoon they delivered the TV and brought it up the stairs for me. That was cool. Cost me an extra $100, but I always believe in patronizing my local stores. But most of those stores went away because of COVID. So what kind of capitalism do we really have where it's all coming back to these big box stores, so-called, and where these big stores get whatever they want? I remember when Amazon was going to come to Queens, and I have nothing but disdain for AOC, Alexandria the barmaid, okay? But she went on a tear about why are we giving them a tax break, and you know what? I happened to agree with her, and I listened to Fox. Oh, my God, they're bringing jobs. Well, I'm sorry that they're bringing jobs and you think they should be rewarded. Either we all get fair treatment under the law or we don't. If the standard is that if you create jobs, we will give you a tax break, then that's fine. Then Joe's, you know, hardware that has 15 employees should also get that same tax break. If you're not willing to give it to Joe's Hardware, but you're willing to give it to Walmart or Amazon, well, I'm sorry, that's not equal protection or equal treatment under the law. Am I right or wrong in that, James?
No, you're absolutely right. And it becomes clearer and clearer all the time that we have a two and sometimes three-tiered justice system in this country.
Mm-hmm. That's why they use the word equity and not equality. They determine what's equitable. Equality means we each get an equal share. Equity is what they determine it means. And I bet everyone has forgotten it, but the Biden administration wanted to give money to farmers who ran into problems, but only if they weren't white. And the courts, of course, immediately shot it down. And I thought this was one of the most outrageous policies I'd ever heard. I wouldn't want to see whites get a benefit not given to blacks. That's why you had the civil rights movement, right? But this turned everything backwards, except it was just a matter of who was getting discriminated against. We are supposed to treat each and every American equally. Period, full stop, nothing more to say. You would think. So AOC went on this big rant about corporate welfare and how it's so wrong, and I agree. And by the way, if Amazon wants to come to New York and they're going to bring with them, you know, I don't know, 25,000 jobs, pick a number, I could care less. If I was the mayor and they said, you know, we need the traffic signs changed or you need to remove parking because we need room for the trucks, I'd be willing to do that. If they said the street needs to be repaved because the trucks are heavy and we're afraid that the streets can't hold the weight of it, I'd repave the streets. They're paying taxes. As they're profitable, they pay me more taxes. They're employing people. They're paying taxes. Everything is cool. So I'm willing to make some concessions to help them to be successful and profitable, but they've got to pay taxes. Why would I want a company in the middle of my city that's that big and that can obstruct so much and not say to them, by the way, you've got to contribute to the economy of the city by paying your fair share of taxes, you see? But the one thing that AOC and the Democrats refuse to acknowledge is that the biggest example of corporate welfare is this army of cheap, exploitable labor. It's all a fantasy. And people fall for it. Just like when they said, we're going to secure the border. Really? What border? Do you know that we're a country of 50 border states and the terrorists who've attacked us repeatedly, for the most part, did not cross land borders but arrived at international airports? So, again, as I started out by saying, should we secure the southern border? Absolutely, we have to. We should secure the northern border. But the biggest deal, we need to have interior enforcement. Why don't they want interior enforcement, you might wonder? Because ICE agents not only arrest illegal aliens, but they arrest crooked employers and crooked lawyers. Think about that. They don't want that to happen. And remember, the immigration system is now a delivery system that delivers an unlimited supply of cheap, exploitable labor, foreign students, foreign tourists, and to the immigration lawyers, clients, an unlimited supply of clientele. How does this help the average American? See, that's the question, James, that every, if they were real journalists, should be asking every politician. If this is the policy you want to pursue, that's fine. That's your vision. You were elected. You've got that job. How does that help the average American? When was the last time someone had the brains or the chutzpah or the moral compass to challenge any president and say, how is this in the best interest of the average American? How is the massive amnesty program for millions of illegal aliens in the best interest of the average American citizen? When was the last time you heard that question asked?
Counting this time, this is it, right here.
Right. The 12th of never, right? As my partner at work used to say. Now, isn't that pathetic? Isn't that pathetic? That should be the most rational and reasonable question, don't you think? Why in the world wouldn't you ask that question? By the way, the woman in Florida, boys and girls, if you're in Florida, you have friends in Florida, the woman who's running for Congress is Maria Salazar, S-A-L-A-Z-A-R. She wants a massive amnesty program for illegal aliens. Now, let me show you how the Magic Act works. The trick is to make it sound reasonable. Well, we can't deport them all anyway. And people say to me, well, Mike, if you can't deport them all, what do you do with the ones you can't catch? And my answer is, and, you know, Jews answer a question with another question, right? So my answer is, what do the cops do with the drunk drivers they don't catch? You catch as many as you can. You make them face consequences, and you publicize it. Click It or Ticket was very successful at getting people to wear seatbelts, right? Click It or Ticket.
Oh, totally.
If you're caught drunk driving, guess what? So, but then she said if they've been here for more than 5 years, and people say, well, isn't that reasonable? And I heard that from Fox all the time. They would sit around in front of the camera. Well, if they've been living here for 5 years, 7 years, whatever. Well, first of all, under the law, if you're here for 10 years and you have no criminal history and you either have a resident alien immediate family member or a U.S. citizen immediate family member, you can file to end deportation in your specific individual case. And that makes sense. You're doing it for the American or that resident alien, and the numbers are small enough that you could actually do an investigation. But to say that we're going to allow 25 million illegal aliens who've been here more than 5 years to stay, there's no capacity to interview anybody, folks, okay? There's no capacity, certainly, to do a field investigation. So how do you know how long an illegal alien's been living here if they ran the border and so they did not create a record of entry? And they're probably using multiple false identities. So the answer is they will answer the question, when did you first enter the United States? So what's to prevent an alien who comes here 8 months from yesterday to fill out an application claiming to have been here since 2008. And the answer is nothing. So they fill it out, and the adjudicator looks at that and says, yep, that's more than 5 years ago. Here's the approval. So all they have to do is lie, and there's no way for us, the government, to refute the lie. Think about that. That's the insanity. That's the insanity. So it sounds reasonable. It's not fair that we arrest people for nonviolent crimes. You know what? I was a law enforcement officer, and I agree with that. I agree with that. But were we really talking about nonviolent crime? So what's a violent crime? You see, you always have to define your terms. So one of the crimes that they will no longer prosecute for is resisting arrest. Now, I want everyone to stop and think. Resisting arrest, well, the guy was struggling with the cop, no big deal. Well, remember what I said to you, that's a life and death struggle in the real world. Now, here's a question that I have to ask you, and I want your audience to think about the answer to this question. The people who die in interacting with police, with very, very few exceptions, what were they doing in the moments before they lost their lives?
They were probably trying to retrieve a weapon from. They were probably trying to get the officer's weapon.
Broader terms, resisting arrest.
Yeah. Oh well. Yeah. They're fighting with the cop. Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So what happens is they resist. Now the situation rapidly escalates, and we have a tragedy. Okay. Think about the guy that was selling cigarettes in Staten Island, resisted arrest. Think about all of these cases. Resisting arrest very often leads to a violent confrontation, which leads to either serious injury or death along the way. Sometimes the police officer, by the way, also. If anything should be prosecuted, it's resisting arrest. In fact, if I had a magic wand, I would double the penalty for resisting arrest. I remember a case where I got a warrant on a Jamaican drug dealer, not a Mexican. I keep saying because this isn't about Latinos. And I had arrested this guy three or four times before. He ultimately was believed to have been involved in a murder, by the way. So I got a warrant for him for the crime of reentry after deportation. By the way, Fox News dutifully reported on what the administration said. We're not going to prosecute people who commit felonies, like misdemeanors rather, like reentry. Really? As a minimum, it's a 2-year crime. I worked with Al D'Amato specifically, myself and several of my colleagues, to create the law of reentry by criminal aliens that carries 20 years in jail. I want to know in what world a 20-year punishment is a misdemeanor, by the way. Okay? So this
now
guy...
that works the same as in anything else, right? I mean, that's whatever, you know, misdemeanor is punishable by less than a year in jail, right? And that's it.
Right, that's right. Right. So, okay. But, and they keep saying these are administrative law violations.
So he's misleading them. He's lying.
Yeah, Biden was lying, and Fox never did their homework. They did their homework.
Right.
And the section of law, folks, by the way, Title 8, United States Code, Section 1326. Go look it up. You'll see. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1326. And 1326B is that piece of law that I convinced Al D'Amato to write. It took us about a year to put this together. And I made the first arrest in New York of a Dominican drug dealer who lost his green card because of multiple arrests and convictions for drugs and weapons charges. Okay, he wound up sentenced to 5 years in jail for reentry. He thought I was kidding when I took him into custody. I pulled him out of jail. He was finishing a jail sentence for yet another drug conviction in upstate New York. And he was snottier than you could imagine, spoke perfect English. He said, I hope the limo has been washed so I have a nice clean car to ride in. I said, yep, but you're not going to be happy with the destination. He said, are you kidding? I'm heading back to the DR, meaning the Dominican Republic. He said, I have a couple of babes I'm going to be hanging with. I said, well, where you're going, your biggest concern is going to be to not drop the soap. And everybody in the jail started laughing when I said that. And when I brought him in for arraignment, he was in shock. He cried like a little girl when I went to his sentencing, and he got 5 years to serve for reentry after deportation. That was the first time that we prosecuted him to the enhanced penalty. So it's not a misdemeanor. Immigration law, this is something I want your audience to know, does have administrative as well as criminal. It's a double deal. Administratively, you can impose small fines, $100 fine, 30 days in jail, that kind of thing. But and the biggest part of the administrative side is the deportation of an alien, right? You committed fraud. We stripped you of the green card. We stripped you of your citizenship. We did that with the Nazi war criminals and terrorists. We're going to put you on an airplane, and we're going to deport you. And if you ever come back, you're looking at years in jail. That's the administrative side. Criminally, it's like anything else. If you commit visa fraud in conjunction with terrorism, it's 25 years in jail. Don't tell me that that's like jaywalking. 25 years in jail for jaywalking? I don't think so. But these are all parts of the lies being fed to the American people by the politicians from both parties and not challenged by the supposed news media. Some reporter needs to stand up and say, what do you mean a misdemeanor? Reentry can result in 20 years in jail. But no one has ever called them out. No one. So this particular guy was arrested, and we deported him. And I'm at work, and I just arrested someone else in the fingerprint room where we fingerprinted and photographed the people that we arrested was next to one of the interview rooms. And as I'm fingerprinting this person that I arrested, I hear the voice of this other guy, and I recognize the voice because I had arrested him a half dozen times before. I said, holy smoke, that's Roy. And I go running into the room, and I said to my buddy, I said, what name did he give you? And the guy looks at me and goes, oh, Agent Cutler, I'm so sorry. I lied about my name. Wow. And so we wound up prosecuting this guy for reentry after deportation. And he wound up getting years in jail. And it was remarkable because his defense attorney actually had the chutzpah to say to me in an elevator as we walked out of the arraignment that the only reason that I was prosecuting this guy was because he was black. Now, it's kind of funny. The elevator was packed. There were at least three or four federal judges in the elevator with us. I'm there with the U.S. attorney that I was working with. And, you know, I always like to have a quick one-liner. And this guy had a rap sheet. My God, you could have wallpapered your house. Guns, armed robbery, narcotics, deportation, armed robbery, shot somebody. I mean, picture a rap sheet like that. And so I looked at her, and I said, you know, I helped the U.S. attorney draw up the indictment. What charge, what was the number of the charge concerning his skin color? And she started maniacally pushing every button on the elevator. She couldn't get out fast enough. You know, one of the judges standing behind me gave me a high five. He said it was the funniest answer he ever heard. And this is what bugs me, because it's always this game. Oh, you arrested that guy because he was black. No, I arrested the guy because he violated the law, and he's a violent criminal who's hurt many people. He eventually went on to kill somebody. We need to stand up to the insanity of all of this, James. You know, it amazes me that as Americans we've become this timid. Everybody got upset about Will Smith slapping Chris Rock. He certainly shouldn't have done it. I'm not going to get into that nonsense. But I remember watching John Wayne movies, or I remember as a kid where we had fist fights all the time. and now we have little microaggressions. And, oh, my God, and people say to me, aren't you afraid people are going to accuse you of being xenophobic? And I said, they could accuse me of being late to dinner. The law is the law. I took an oath to uphold the law. And if you think those laws are unfair, talk to your congressman or talk to your state senator or whomever. Change the law. But before you do that, read the law and tell me what's unfair about it. Just like the grounds for excluding aliens. It has nothing to do with race or religion. It's about keeping out people who pose a threat to public safety, public health, national security, or the jobs and wages of Americans. Why wouldn't we want laws that issue that deal with those issues? Can you explain that to me, James, or am I missing something?
No, you're not missing a thing, Mike. And back to what you were saying earlier, and after that fist fight, the odds were that if you didn't become best friends, you at least became better friends. And none of that happens anymore these days.
Yeah, because you worked it out. But that was supposed to be manly behavior. But now, of course, we have toxic masculinity. What does that even mean? See, I personally don't give a damn what consenting adults do in private. I really don't care. Okay, I'm a New Yorker. You're not going to shock me. I don't care. Do it in private. I'm good with it. But don't criticize me because I'm not into your thing, whatever your thing is. You accept who I am, I accept who you are, and we move on. But that's not what's happening today. Today, you're going to be ostracized if you're not part of this lunatic clique. And it's a very small but vocal clique. And as Americans, we have become, I don't know, wusses. We are easily intimidated, just like Joe Biden. We stand for nothing. I mean, do you know? I couldn't believe it. I just sent this off to a couple of my kids, and they thought I was kidding. Do you know that Pepsi is now making Cracker Jills instead of Cracker Jacks?
Jesus wept.
My goodness. I mean, what more can I say?
We're on the other side of the looking glass, Michael. Black is white, white is black, freedom is slavery, knowledge is ignorance.
Yep.
You sound like George Orwell, aren't you? Yeah.
How much are you now sounding like George Orwell?
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
But you see, because we've allowed this. My dad was a pretty smart guy. You know, tradesmen are very practical, down-to-earth, smart people, I have to tell you. And my pop said to me that you will teach people how they should treat you by demonstrating what you're willing to accept. And he said to me, if you allow people to get away with that kind of crap, don't blame me for it. Blame yourself. Look in the mirror and blame the person you're looking at because you allowed this to happen. And then you see this thing with the statues. Well, George Orwell, here's what Orwell said. The most effective way to destroy people is to deny and obliterate their own understanding of their history. Think about that. Think about that. This is about the destruction of America. So we're going full circle. And here is my question. My question is simply this. For those people who think America is such a terrible place, toxic masculinity included. I subscribe to toxic masculinity, by the way. What do you think of that? Look at what happens when we step back. Does America make mistakes? You bet. Will we continue to make mistakes? Absolutely, because it's built on people. People make mistakes. My parents taught me early on that that's the reason they put erasers on the back of pencils. We make mistakes. But as my dad said, mistake is really a lesson if you learn from what goes wrong. If you keep doing it again, it's unacceptable. But the point of the matter is that as bad and evil as they somehow think America is, I want them to look at Ukraine. I want them to look at the dead bodies. I want them to look at those children, those burned bodies, the shelled buildings. That wasn't a natural occurrence. It wasn't an asteroid that hit the Earth. Okay, it wasn't a comet that slammed in. This isn't a movie with Robert Duvall. This is for real, and it was done intentionally and willfully by the command of Putin, followed up by a bunch of soldiers who maybe forgot about what happened with the Nuremberg defense that we were following orders. I hope they all rot in hell, but I hope that they have a painful journey to get there. So you think America's wrong? It was that America refused to stand up that caused that bloodbath that should infuriate every breathing person who looks at those images. And I guarantee you that if the tyrants that are emboldened by the insanity of the left gain control over this country, those individuals who can't figure out how to properly use a bathroom would probably be put up against the wall and shot. When you look at China with the Uyghurs and the concentration camps and these so-called, you know, sports heroes. My God, my favorite oxymoron is heroic play. I'm trying to figure out how the hell you can be a hero when you're playing. But they're willing to buy sneakers made by slave labor. They're willing to buy computers made by slave labor. You know, you look at the computers that come out of China. They're built over at, Fox? I'm trying to remember the company that makes the computers in China. They actually have the people living in the factories. And because I'm of twisted mind and I find that humor sometimes helps to get people to remember the point. Foxconn, by the way, is the company that were making the electronic parts for our computers. And there were reports that people were actually throwing themselves out of the windows because they couldn't take it anymore. I mean, imagine living and working in the factory and your family is forced to live there with you. Kind of like little gerbils running around a little Ferris wheel in a cage. And what did China do to address the depression that led to their own citizens hurling themselves out of the windows? They put up nets.
Put bars on
the falling bodies. No, they put up nets. So that's acceptable. Of course, when I told the story a couple of years ago on a radio show, I said that if they profited from a little bit of Western ingenuity, they wouldn't have put up nets. They would have put up trampolines, but that's a story for another day. Full gallows humor. But my goodness. So for all this self-righteousness, it's okay that Russia, you know, drills for oil or that China is opening up ever more coal mines, but don't do it here. If you pollute the environment, it pollutes the entire planet. Am I against pollution? You're damn right I am. But if you're that stupid that you want to weaken America, which is really what this is about, if you weaken America waiting in the wings, Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, are you crazy? The problem is that many of these people are incapable of thinking. They've been sold propaganda, and they are buying it lock, stock, and barrel, and it is extremely dangerous, and they need to wake up to what the reality is. You know, I love Orwell's explanation of political language, which is what we hear all the time from these grifters who get elected to office. Political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable and to give an appearance of solidity to pure wind. Is that not what we are bombarded with on a constant basis by the so-called news organizations as well as the politicians? The only thing that I'm encouraged by, I kind of enjoy Elon Musk. He's an interesting character. And he now controls just under 10% of Twitter, and he has been hugely critical of the censorship by Twitter. So this may get interesting yet. But my gosh, folks, when you're dealing with Twitter or one of these things, we need to find ways of getting around it. Freedom is not free. And I disagreed with Reagan on a number of his policies. The one thing he said that I agree with 100% when he talked about how freedom is never more than one generation from extinction. When I saw college kids just 10 years ago being interviewed saying that the First Amendment wasn't a big deal, when they could not identify who America fought in the Second World War, I knew we were in deep trouble. Americans need to have a sense of pride as to what America is, warts and all. And as the Founding Fathers said, to continue to try to make this that more perfect union. And we're going to stumble along the way. But my gosh, just like with the energy situation, my mother said to me, you don't throw out the dirty water till you have clean water. You want to strive for 100% clean energy? That's great. When you get there, then we can talk about electrified cars. When you get there, we're not there yet. And we need to understand that America is that barrier to tyranny. and only a lunatic would be willing to take down that barrier, knowing what the consequences would be, not just for America, but for the entire world. And if you want to have a sneak preview, look no further than Ukraine. What do you think of that, James?
Spot on. This thing in Ukraine, it was because the Archduke of Ferdinand went down the wrong street, I think in Sarajevo in 1914, that everything blew apart in the First World War, and Europe was devastated, setting the stage for what happened barely 30 years later. And I wonder sometimes, and the pictures that you were talking about earlier with the refugees in the train stations, yeah, it threw me back exactly to that era that you were talking about when the Nazis were doing this to the Jews and the Gypsies and all the other undesirables. And I see scheming, conniving people, and while I'm unsure exactly of their motive, I am convinced that it's nefarious. And you're right, these people in Washington, D.C., they don't give two rat's asses about what you or I or anybody else in this country thinks. If they think they have the power to go ahead and do whatever it is they're going to do, then there is a true failure in that fourth branch that we talked about earlier, and that's the American people, the electorate. And I have long said, we've got about 3 minutes, I'm going to wrap this up. You know, I have long said that the solution, the cobalt treatment for this particular cancer is an informed and disseminating electorate.
Yep.
And I'm talking about from the ground zero, from your boards of education, your city councils, your county commissions, who you're sending to your state houses of legislature, and from there, what's happening in Washington, D.C. And if they're not meeting the mandate, then you have to move them out. Again, this is another case where constant vigilance has to be applied. Who was it? I do this every time. Orrin Hatch. Orrin Hatch said it was impossible to go to Washington, D.C. and come back an honest man. And we have to watch these folks. And when they no longer represent the mandate of the people that sent them there, they're no longer, they got to go.
Well, then they're being insubordinate, and where I come from, insubordination is a fireable offense. What do you think of that?
Yes, we terminate. We terminate them, and we hire somebody else until we find the right people.
Well, and that's right. But again, it starts with the American people standing up and understanding of the power of one. All it takes is one person standing up and saying, no, you don't. Getting your voice heard. Have those conversations with your neighbors. Folks, I can't emphasize this enough. Not fights, not name-calling. And please be willing to listen to someone you disagree with. I am always challenging my perspectives because I do get it wrong. We all get it wrong, and you're not going to know that you're wrong until you listen to someone else who causes you to challenge your own belief system. So when someone could say to me, oh, my God, you upset my audience because you were talking ill of Ronald Reagan and he was fooled and he was – I said, look, I don't care. I'm telling you from my view what he did got us into trouble, period. And if it upsets somebody, too damn bad. I was going to California to give a speech. I said, well, if you're going to talk about Ronnie, this is Reagan country, then we're not going to send you the ticket. I said, no, they said, if you're going to come, don't talk about it. I said, if I can't talk about it, if you're going to censor me, don't send me a ticket. I went. And I got a standing ovation from that crowd. And I said, this isn't about assigning blame. This is about learning from mistakes. My father taught me that mistakes aren't really mistakes. They're lessons if we learn from what goes wrong, and then we change our conduct accordingly. But if we're not willing to accept, then we're in trouble.
That's all the time we've got, Mike.
Thank
we're down
you so
to
much
the last 30
seconds. The show, by the way, James.
We're down to the last 30 seconds, as always. It is my great pleasure to have you on. And, you know, as I've said many times, you have a home here. And you can come on anytime you want. We love having you. We've got 20 seconds. Michael, thank you so much for being here with you. That's all the time we got, folks. Closing it out. We'll be back Thursday right here, 7 p.m., taking a look at things as we do through a conservative perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. Thank you, Michael Cutler. We'll see you guys on Thursday.
Thank you, sir.
Huh.